Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in the Standard, 4-star review in the Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to Richard Herring's Lavatory Servicing Truck podcast. I found a webpage which gives loads of definitions of what LST stands for. I don't know why it's taken me so long. But apparently it stands for Lavatory Servicing Truck. So with the new direction of the podcast, we're just going to be trying out different lavatory servicing trucks each week with a guest. Decide which one's best, that's the idea. But I was hanging around I was enjoying pumpkin time at Sunnyfields Farm today. I love pumpkins. I hate squash. The pumpkins call it Rahalastapa, so I don't know if that's gonna. Don't know if that's gonna catch on. It is lovely to be here in Totten. I can say that honestly because last night I was in New Milton. Thank God I'm not there any longer. I have to say, I do resent all the signs as I drive between these two places saying, please take care of the horses, don't drive into the horses, horses don't dent, they die. Fucking put some fences up. Not my problem. Everywhere else in the world puts fences around their livestock. Love to be here in Totten. I've got to look on my phone for, I've got some reviews. Imagine going to the pumpkin world at Sunnyside Farm and feeling so disappointed in it that you leave a bad review on TripAdvisor. Your heart would have to be dead, right? Steve Humby. The displays with pumpkins are good. The rest of it, however, is like the Halloween aisle in Asda. Not much to do and it's over in 5 minutes. Nothing more than a glorified pumpkin supermarket that you have to pay to go in. That man's heart's dead. Aaron H., not prepared to put his full name. The visit was on Saturday, carved on Monday, but one of the pumpkins had to be put in the bin Tuesday due to it being extremely mouldy. Pumpkins were expensive for the quality that you get, plus entrance fees. I spent nearly £70 on a handful of pumpkins that are not of good quality, even though surely a handful of pumpkins is one pumpkin, right? I don't think he went to the pumpkin farm. I just think someone saw him come. Do you want a pumpkin? Not that good quality, even though I tried to choose the healthiest looking ones I could find. So a couple of disgruntled customers for your pumpkin farm. To be honest, it was hard to find things in Totten. There's one more thing luckily, because I'm back here next week, or a few weeks ago, actually, as it turns out, you'll see. There we'll go. Is there anything else for you? What I've learned about Totten... It claimed to be the largest village in England until it became a town in 1974. That's basically it. I mean, claiming to be large, that's not a good thing. Oh, we're the largest village. It's not, that's not a, I'm the tallest dwarf. That's not, it's not a thing. The point with a village is it's small, then you became a town, and what? Medium-sized town. So well done. Done for that. Oh, I should say, you're very lucky here in Totten tonight because I have got too much stuff in my garage. And so I've given you some free stuff that would usually cost a lot of money. I've given you each a free book, or pretty much all of you got a free book and a free program. So do enjoy those. Take those away. I will be making collection for Scope at the end if you wish to give something for those books, but you do not have to. I will be in the foyer after the show selling some books and stuff, and DVDs even, if you've still got a DVD player. I'm happy to sign your books, sign your programmes, selfies, all that stuff. You don't have to buy anything. But, you know, I've been a nice guy, haven't I? I've given you free stuff. You know, think on. Right, let's crack on. We've got an absolutely fantastic guest. I believe he's done the Edinburgh Fringe podcast before, but I can't believe this guy has not been on proper Rahalastapa. Thank you. Before, he's probably best known for his adverts for Virgin Mobile that aired in Australia. That is why we're here tonight. A lot of fans of those adverts have come over. Will you please welcome absolutely the incredible Paul Foote, ladies and gentlemen. Here he comes. Paul Foote. Here he comes. Here he is. It's him. There's your mic. Sorry, I smashed it about a bit. I hope it's going to be okay. Paul Foote. Hello.
Hello.
It's lovely.
It's nice here, isn't it?
It's very nice here. It's lovely. It's actually quite cool in the theatre. It's absolutely boiling hot backstage, isn't it?
Yeah,
once you get up here, it's quite nice.
Oh, it's lovely. I like this podcast.
Do you?
The other one I did with you was the Edinburgh podcast.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't like that one.
Didn't you?
No, it was a totally different atmosphere. Even though it was just you.
Me talking to you in the stand or something? Yeah.
In the stand. But it was a very different sort of side of your personality that came out that night. It was very unpleasant, aggressive. This is... I'm seeing a really nice side of you, a sort of bumbling side of you as you mess around with your...
I've dropped my spectacles
reading
and
glasses.
I messed up the thing.
It's sort of an avuncular, sort of amiable side of you.
Thank you, that's nice.
To be honest, I've never really seen before.
Well, I'm a lot older now. That was probably 14 years ago or something like that.
Well, that's true. And also, you know, you're so different in the dressing room to on stage. Like, for example, you was being so nice and saying to people, they don't have to buy anything... And all that, and you were selling me all that stuff in the dressing room at twice the normal price.
I was.
Like, very mercenary.
Very mercenary.
Yeah,
but, you know, I steal from the rich and I give to the poor.
Yes.
I think I might have got the wrong way around in this case. The people of Totten might be quite well off, I think. Oh. I steal from the poor and I give to the rich.
Yes, yes.
Silly bitch. good. Well, the Virgin ads that you did in Australia...
Yes, they were very well known here.
They are well known. So we can talk about them... And we have many listeners in Australia who will know them very well. But you were were you talking to Richard Branson in those adverts?
Well, it was amazing. I spent 2 weeks out there filming it. It was for Virgin Mobile, and I played a character called Robin de Hood.
Wow.
That was my character. Okay. And it was filmed in Sherwood near Brisbane.
Okay.
So that was the idea of that was the sort of joke. Behind the reason that they flew me all the way to Australia to make the advert. And I was all dressed in red. I had, like, red tights, and I cycled on a very strange bicycle all around the town. And it was, you know, in the advert, I was sort of really popular, and everyone would follow me because I was giving everyone a good deal on their mobile phones.
That's nice.
And it wasn't like a normal advert because it was all stupid. Like, I just, like, made up my own things. Like, one of the adverts was, I went into a pub and I said, I shall finish this mead tomorrow. And then the barman said, no, you've got to finish it now. And so and I said, I want to have it tomorrow. So the idea was that I was saying, oh, with Virgin Mobile, you can roll over your minutes the next month, sort of thing. Yeah. And then I said, that's right, I remember. And then I said, he said, no, you have to use it now. And I said, outrage. I said, and I had my own like stupid way of speaking. Outrage, I said. With Virgin Mobile, what you haven't used now, you can use later. Like all stupid voice like that. And then the director came over to me and he said, in the next take, can you say, instead of saying outrage, can you just say it normally, please? And he said, can you not say, you can use it later. Could you just say it later? I think that's better. So I did it that way. And then I could see, because the way adverts work is that you have all like the people making it, and then you have the client, who are Virgin Mobile in this case, who never talk directly to you. They're sort of in a corner. And then I could see them talking to someone else, because they don't talk to the director directly. They talk to someone else. And then that person then talks to the director. And then the director came back over and said, for this next take and all future takes, will you please say outrage and also say later? And it was quite successful because then later, I mean, I knew people who would go into, like, in fact, it was the producer of the advert who said he realised it was a successful advert because he went into a pub somewhere in the middle of nowhere in Australia and someone just said, outrage! And it was all just stupid things like that. A lot of it I just made up.
Yeah.
I was just ad-libbing weird just scenes and stuff.
Yeah.
Because I had made Marion and all these funny little other people who lived with me in this strange tent in this sort of fantasy world they'd built for me. And then, you know, the director of photography and all the people filming, they just said they'd never been on an advert like that. It was just the whole thing. It was just weird.
Right.
It was so fun. And, and I did do one thing with... It was supposed to be with Richard Branson, but we couldn't... He was in Australia at the time, but we couldn't actually do it. He was in Sydney and I was in Brisbane. Mm. But our mutual diaries didn't kind of match up.
Wow.
So he had to film his bit separately, and I filmed my bit separately, and in it I was in a forest, and I had to like shoot a peacock, but it was obviously dead already. It was like a stuffed peacock, pretend peacock,
yeah.
And I had to shoot it with my arrow, and then the mobile went off, and it was Richard Branson.
Wow!
And I said something about, "Hello, you tycoon." And then I was told that Richard Branson didn't like being called a tycoon. Right. So I had to change it to successful businessman or something like that. Yeah. No, he doesn't like tycoon. It doesn't sound right, you know.
Right.
Yeah, that was that advert.
That's amazing. Well, you're a big star in Australia, I would say. You go to Australia a lot, right?
Quite. I've been there, you know, I was got back last month.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you've just been out there again. How was the last... Was it Melbourne, I presume?
Melbourne,
Adelaide?
All the places.
Sydney.
Melbourne, Adelaide, Sydney,
yeah.
Brisbane. Name another place.
There's
one other place.
Uluru, did you go down Uluru in the middle?
No, I didn't know.
Alice Springs.
No, there's one major place I've not mentioned.
The capital, Canberra.
Canberra, yeah. Another major place I haven't mentioned.
There is another one.
On the West Coast.
We could just make the whole podcast me naming Australian cities. I mean, the people of Tottenham can join
I'm
in.
I'm afraid you run out of time.
The Gold Coast.
Perth. Yeah, I did do Gold Coast as well.
Yeah.
That's kind of Brisbane, really. It's the same thing, really.
Okay.
Yeah, I did all those places.
And the Australians dig what you're doing?
Yeah, it seems to go. I went there the first time 12 years ago, and I remember going there thinking, I'll probably never go to Australia again. And I just took to it like a duck to water. And they seemed to take to me like a duck to water. And then it was shortly after that I did the Virgin Mobile advert.
And then bang, assured. That was it, once you'd done that.
That was it.
Does every tour called the Outrage Tours? That's what you have to do?
Well, I could do it. I should. I think I might bring back that character.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't really a character. It was just me in a pair of red tights just speaking stupid stuff. But it was really fun.
Yeah.
And my favourite... Actually, one of my favourite bits was... There was one bit where I wasn't... It was showing how helpful I was because I was helping everyone with their mobile phone problems. But I was helping them in other ways, and then there was a dwarf, and he couldn't reach the table to get his beer. So in the bit, I had to sort of like bend down, and then he stood on my back, to get the beer.
Yeah.
And then, but it was quite heavy.
Yeah.
And I could feel it on my back, you know, like that. And then I was like lying on the floor. This was the very first day of the filming. And I was lying on the floor saying, my butt hurts. And you could see them just thinking, oh my goodness, like this is the star of the advert and his butt's hurt. And like, this is going to be some serious legal.
Yeah, legal repercussions.
But anyway, a bit later, it did feel a bit better. Then I said, I really feel like I want a massage in my hotel room later. And they were like, yeah, whatever you want. So I got a free massage.
Oh, that's good, but that worked out well.
They preferred to pay $150 for a massage than a massive amount of legal stuff.
Yeah. It could have been like Back to the Future. You could have been the Eric Stoltz of those adverts. You know, Eric Stoltz was to Marty McFly, first of all. Oh, they filmed like for about 2 months. And then they decided Eric Stoltz from Mask. This is the guy from Mask. His face isn't really like that. He wasn't good enough, so they replaced him with Michael J. Fox. But there's a little bit of Eric Stoltz left in Back to the Future if you look carefully.
Oh, I see. What, he appears in an occasional
is shot. One of the shots is the back of his head, I think.
Yeah, that's a bit like...
That could have been you.
That film called The Crow, where that man died in it.
Brandon Lee. Yeah.
And that's why there's various shots where you think, that's not the best shot. They didn't have much choice, did they?
They didn't.
He was kind of dead, you know.
Yeah.
So, like, I can imagine the editor was sort of saying, look, I don't like this shot. This is an awkward one here. It's a bit of a boot. The boom's hanging in. And, like, doesn't matter about the boom. He's dead. Use the shot. There are a few shaky shots in there.
Yeah. It's nice they still put the film together after killing him.
And then there was that other business, wasn't there? With that I can't remember that name of that.
Alec Baldwin?
Yeah, and he just shot someone.
He just shot some of the crew. I mean, I think... It's a bit weird. I believe it was an accident, but it's a good way to keep the crews in line. They can get... If there's just the danger that an actor might do that
in the
future.
I might do that later in the dressing room. I might say to you, look, I really didn't enjoy the podcast, and I've got a gun here. You know, I'm sure that it's just it's got blanks in it, but I'm going to point it at you and fire it at you.
And see what happens.
Knowing, I'm pretty certain that it's a blank, but if it isn't, I take no responsibility.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to do.
Okay, well, that's good.
But anyway, I don't know why, but I mean, I don't know why they bothered making the film. I mean, no one was going to watch it, would they?
Seen shots with it. Because the reason they have to carry on making it is because they've put millions of dollars into it. And probably with Brandon Lee, they thought.
Oh, the Brandon Lee one. Yeah. I mean the one with that Baldwin.
Alec Baldwin. They are making it.
I mean, it sounded really boring. It was just like, some people walk in and, oh, I'm going to shoot you. I want you. You've done it. If you've done a deal as well, you've gone behind my back. You're going to die as well. You know, no one's interested.
That sounded quite good, Paul. I want to see more of this weird. I mean, this weird film where the script is. That's just written down on the screen. We could improvise.
That's what films are, aren't they?
They are. It's what his films are. Alec Baldwin. It's all people's going. Wah.
It's always the same thing. There's always a plot twist. Everyone could see it a mile off, you know.
Yeah.
We're partners in crime doing a thing, but then we find out halfway through that actually I'm not really your partner in crime. I'm going to shot you. And also, I've got a dark secret. And also, you've got a problem that you have to overcome. You're nervous of something. You're nervous of heights, and that's your big thing.
Yeah.
And at the end of it, you have to realise that I was betraying you. And you have to realise... you realise who your true friends really are, and you realise it's not me, and you also realise you've got to face your fear, because in order to find your new friends, you've got to go on a zip wire to get them, and you've got to face your fear of the heights. You know,
this is really good, Paul. This is very good. I would watch that film.
That's what it's like.
You've moved on from Alec Baldwin just to the entire work of all cinema. It's what you say. All cinema is a waste of time because it is just what the zip wire thing I think I have seen in every film. There's a...
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
I mean, you know when people like put on their dating things and they say, One of the things they say, I love the cinema. They say, and they always say on dating, I love evenings in and evenings out, which are the two possibilities. There is no other possibility other than being dead. You either have to spend it in or out. Anyway, and then they say cinema. I love cinema. Like everyone, and then everyone just loves cinema. And everyone say, "Oh, I love the cinema. I hate the cinema. It's boring."
Well, that's good. On a dating app, you could probably hate the cinema, and you'll find someone who hates it as well.
Every single film, it either starts really boringly, takes ages to get going, or it starts well, then it dips in the middle, gets better, and you think they could have left out 45 minutes there, or. The other one.
I mean, you're getting in danger of critiquing all entertainment here, including stand-up comedy. There's a danger people go, that's also true of stand-up comedy.
Well, there is a danger of that.
Yeah. And podcasts. Yeah, I've definitely noticed podcasts.
I've noticed with your podcast, listeners, that they often dip down. You know,
They do. At some stage or other.
They do. You know, I've listened to them. So many of them have weak starts.
Yeah.
So many of them have week endings, and then there's countless ones where the middle part you just think, please take that 45 minutes out in the middle out. Just do everyone a favour.
Yeah.
You know, there's, you know, it's not, you know, and then there's someone carefully editing it, just tweaking the sound on this middle bit. No, get rid of it. Take everyone.
We'll take this bit out.
In fact, I think we may find that this isn't even being recorded.
Well, that's true. There is the danger that this could just disappear into the ether, which is nice. You know, the sound waves will travel out through space. Eventually, someone will just hear it. There was an alien civilization will be able to decipher just the sound waves.
Yes, I think the things that if humanity disappeared, there would be no trace of us in a few thousand years, apart from the radio waves.
Right.
That would just be
going out forever
with, you know, some inconsequential Richard Herring podcast emanating through various solar systems for eons to come.
Well, you know, that's what I love about history and archaeology and everything. There's every chance the one thing that survives is just the worst thing there was in that civilization. But that's all that survives is the civilization.
And it may well be that we do make contact with another civilization and that another civilization picks up radio waves.
Yeah.
And they may be someone very advanced technology they're using. They're saying we're picking something up. We think there's some sort of life form. Probably, I think it's going to be on the outer, sort of middle to outer edges of the Milky Way. Oh, yes, I know the Milky Way, that galaxy over there. And they'll say, it seems to be some sort of podcast with Richard Herring and Paul Furton. They'll be listening and they'll be just saying, this is incredible. Wow, we found a new civilization. Yeah. And then they'll say, I wouldn't bother.
I mean, they definitely would from that as well. But they might be impressed that we're talking about the very thing that's happening to them.
Yeah, it's incredible what I'm saying, predicting that on the Andromeda galaxy they're going to hear this.
They'll think we're... So they might worship us as gods. Paul, you know, you and I, we've... Our paths have crossed many times. I looked you up on... Because I write a blog. I've written a blog every day for over 20 years, right? And so my memory's quite bad now. I'm an old man. And I'd forgotten this incident, but I saw you at a gig. I went to see you, and I wasn't even gigging with you. And you did this bit, which I don't know if you remember. You said, I'm now going to do a play about John Terry, the footballer. Because you used to improvise plays.
Yeah, I do sometimes do that, improvise a play.
Yeah. And then someone in the audience said, you can't do that! You can't do that! John Terry is my cousin! And he got quiet... You got quite distraught about... And you hadn't even done them. It might have been a play celebrating John Terry. We didn't know yet.
Well, it would have been.
Yeah.
I always feel that John Terry needs more adulation.
Actually, he does. He gets a hard time. And so I think I actually got so annoyed with this guy that I chipped in and I heckled back at him. I don't remember this at all. But then you put him down and then you did your play and he quite enjoyed it, I have to say. Do you remember that incident?
I don't remember. No. But it's an incredible anecdote.
It is. Yeah. Imagine, I don't know if he really was John Terry's cousin or whether there was a man Just pretending to be John Terry's cousin for the attention?
Yeah, it could have been, yeah.
You never know with hecklers, do you?
You never know with you know, you never know.
Yeah.
I had one, it was a show in Leeds, and people, I've seen this happen a few times. It was a show in Leeds, going really well, but like one person or a couple of people didn't like it. All the, you don't like your comedy, all that stuff. And I did all these usual stuff, saying, well, if you don't like it, what's the point of being here? Everyone else is enjoying it. And then then she pulled up this, I've just been to my mother's funeral, and now this, you know. And I knew it was lies. I knew it was lies. And I said that to the audience, it's all lies. And they're all saying, oh, no, what if it was, you know. And, yeah. then afterwards, of course, it was revealed
to be a lie.
No, it's true. It was revealed that she'd killed her mother. So it was her fault anyway. It was her fault. In fact, she was only out on license from she was on remand, yeah, facing the murder charges, and the prison, they had said, look, you can attend your funeral, it's your own mother's funeral, you probably almost certainly killed her, you're going to be sentenced for it next week. And then she said, I'd also like to see Paul Foot's previous doing one in Leeds. They said, all right, you can go and see that as well. After that, it's straight back inside, you know.
But you don't understand why she was annoyed and not enjoying it. I mean, if she, you know, for anyone else, it's just an evening wasted. For her, it's her, one of her last days of freedom. Well, it's her last chance to see a comedy show. And then you come on and do something not to her taste. I think she has a right to complain.
I think it was to
her.
I think she enjoyed the show. She was just I think she was just annoyed that she knew she needed to be back in by 8:30. You know?
Yeah.
Very strict at Leeds Prison. Back in at 8:30. Even if it's just remand, back in at 8:30. Lights out by 9. And she was thinking, like, I'm really enjoying this anecdote Paul's doing. If only I could hear more of it. But she had to go back into the prison, you see.
You're making me laugh and cry at the same time with that, Anna. That's
I feel responsible. In the same way, I feel possibly responsible for potentially costing every single person in this room about £500 each. Because
did you vote for Liz Truss as the Prime Minister?
That's exactly.
Is it this?
You're right on the nose there. I didn't vote for her, but I was at university.
Oh, with her?
And knew her at university. And I didn't know her that well. I just saw a few sort of events and things and spoke. But, you know, I don't think it's anything to do with me. But there's always a bit of you that thinks, did I say something? Something like, what do you tend to do in your life? Oh, yes, I think, what are you going to do, Paul? I think I'll be a comedian, that'd be nice. What do you think you'll do, going to politics? Well, that's nice, yeah, we need to change the way things are. Good to take a few risks. don't necessarily want to just listen to the voice of convention. You don't what was it she was always saying? You don't want to listen to the voice of reason or whatever it was. You don't want to listen to the voice of reason. People are being they don't want to listen to the boring Treasury orthodoxy. No, you don't want to do that. Take a few risks. You know, maybe I said something that maybe put something in her mind.
She was a liberal at university, right? So maybe she just met you and thought, no. People like Paul Foot should not be allowed to live. There's only one way to stop it. I've probably cost you all about 500 quid as well, because if you look at the back of that free programme I've given you, it says, go with Bulb. It might cost you less than your current provider. It fucking didn't, did it? Thanks for sponsoring the programme for Scope, though, Bulb.
Well, they sponsored it.
They sponsored this, yeah. And I used to do a thing. It worked out very well for me. where everyone who signed up to them got 50 quid and I got 50 quid. And I got loads of people to sign up for it. It was they had a little thing. I don't know why they went broke. But every time you signed someone new up using your code, they got 50 quid and you got 50 quid. So I signed up like quite a lot of people.
And this is for a charity?
No, they then backed my programme that
you
was
said for Scope.
The programme's for Scope, but the.
I thought that's what I was confused by. I thought you were getting £50 from Scope every time someone signed. Yeah.
And I spend it on destroying access to buildings. I'm a terribly evil person in my spare time. So sorry about that. So sorry between the two of us for you encouraging Liz.
I mean, that's the one thing about this podcast, isn't it? It might be, you know. raising money for Scope.
Yeah.
But there's no disabled people as your guests, are there? There's no access whatsoever. Any disabled person would not be able to get to this stage.
Onto this stage. Yeah,
you always make sure that there's a stage with no disabled access. There's no ramp, no way in.
There isn't. Yeah. No. I mean, basically evil. I'm basically an evil person.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Let's ask, I want to ask him some emergency questions, Paul, because, because, you know, I think you'll be the best at this. Let me ask you, this is my new favourite one, and this one has been made up by AI, which makes it even more exciting.
So you didn't come up
with I didn't come up with this. I just put into AI, write an emergency question in the style of Richard Herring. Most of them are nonsense, which is fine, which we will get to. But this one is quite a good question. What is the most ludicrous thing you've ever done in the name of love, Paul Foote?
The most ludicrous thing?
Yeah, that you've done in the name of love.
I've ever done in the name of love?
Yeah.
Well, I suppose, I don't know whether it's ludicrous, but it's certainly boring.
Yeah, boring's good.
I went to the cinema. Well, what it was, I don't know whether it was ludicrous, but I was going out with this gentleman, this boyfriend, and things were going through a difficult patch.
Okay.
It was a difficult time. And then I said, oh, let's go to the cinema. It was one of those things where, you know, I thought, at least we're together at the cinema and maybe we can... And then I thought to myself, well, if we're in the cinema, maybe I could put my hand on his leg or something.
Yeah.
Perhaps even go further. Within the law. people looking at me. It was like a real shocked...
Yeah, they...
The people of Totten were looking at me in this shocked way.
Yeah.
Like this aghast. Like, obviously, never in a million years would I ever consider... revealing a gentleman's penis in a public cinema. Of course I wouldn't do that.
No.
Well, I have done, but, you know. I thought, well, this is ideal, you know. Anyway, it was a film, and it starred Bjork.
Okay.
And it was about the character that Bjork played. It was like a straight film. It wasn't like singing or whatever. And it was all about she was a mother and I think her daughter got murdered.
Okay.
But she got accused of killing her own daughter and in the end, or something like that, and she was blind. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I remember it now. She was blind. She was blind and she got accused of murdering someone and it wasn't true. And then she had to, in the end, she had to go to the gallows and it was all a total... It was totally wrong. She had never killed this person. Wow. And it was all sad. And she was, like, all walking along towards, like, where
she, where you put the thing over your neck, and she couldn't see properly. Yeah. She was all like blind, trying to find the gallows. Yeah. It was all like, you know, like slapstick, but not funny slapstick, like terrible slapstick. All tripping over, trying to find the gallows so that I can face my own death for the murder that I've never done. Yeah, I don't think she had killed it. I don't think the daughter was dead. I think the daughter was there, like there to watch her own mother being hanged, but the daughter was crying, mother, is this not right? You're going to die, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And it was really sad, and at the end she was hanged and she was dead, and that was kind of the end. You realised there was no hope left. The point I'm making is, at no point, this was like a two-hour film, and it was just relentlessly sad and tragic.
Yeah.
There wasn't a single moment of light relief when even for a moment it would have seemed even at all appropriate for me just gently, even just for a second, to gently put my hand onto his penis. And it was so sad and miserable. And then we split up shortly after that anyway.
Well, probably because of that.
Yeah. And now he lives in Estonia. I mean, it's a disaster. That was one of my most unsuccessful sort of love occasions.
Yeah, that was bad. I like the idea of the daughter being at the hanging and going, isn't that the girl she was meant to have murdered? Doesn't matter, she's been found guilty.
Yeah, I think...
Hang her anyway.
I think it was a neighbour. She was accused of... Oh, a neighbour had come round and...
Does anyone know what this film is? You've made it up, Paul.
It was in about... No, I haven't made it up. It's a real film. You can look it up later. Maybe later in the podcast you can put a link to it.
Okay, I'm going to...
So that people know, for the one time in my life, in my career... The one time when I actually told the truth, okay. I didn't just make something up. People
okay,
would
we'll,
know.
We'll link
yeah,
to...
there really was a film by Bjork which got hanged or something.
I think we may have spoiled the film a bit for those people. Although maybe not, because it was quite unclear what actually happened.
To be honest, you sort of knew from the start. In fact, I think he told me. I think he said to me, "Oh, let's go and watch this film. It's about Bjork, and she gets accused of a murder, and she didn't really do it, and at the end she gets hanged." But I knew from the start.
Maybe that's the title.
Yeah, I think
it's a film about Bjork. She does a murder that she didn't really do, and at the end she gets hanged. Look that up on IMDb. Let's find it. It'll be good. Here are some other AI questions that are quite Paul Foot, but that aren't very easy to answer. Let's do this one. We've done this one before. But if you were stuck in a lift with a sentient jar of pickles that claimed to be your long-lost brother, would you believe him? And, if so, would you risk tasting his briny essence to confirm his identity? Or would you prefer to remain a cucumber coward?
How would I know it's a him?
Well, exactly. The question gives away. It says that by calling him rather than it,
yeah.
It sort of confirms that it is your brother.
Yeah, I always
it?
Think of gherkins as more female.
Do you?
Yes. I always think of a gherkin as female and a pickled onion... As a small male.
Do you? I mean, I would definitely go exactly the opposite for...
A Cornishon, more sort of non-binary.
Okay.
Well, a Cornishon is literally non-binary because it's neither gherkin nor onion, is it? Somewhere between the two. It's a sort of hybrid. It's the size of a small pickled onion.
Yeah.
But the taste of a gherkin.
Yeah, so it is... There's a lesson for us all, though, isn't there, in pickle form?
Well, there is. The Cornishon is the maverick of the pickle
it
world.
Is. But shunned by pickle society as a result.
Yeah. The Cornishon is the Cornish. To put it another way, to give you another analogy, because I don't think we've had enough, the Cornishon is the caperberry of the accompaniment... to turbot world. In terms of an accompaniment to turbot,
yes.
You would normally go for a caper.
Yeah.
But the but you very occasionally go for a caperberry.
And when you say turbot, you mean the fish, the turbot?
Yeah, turbot.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, turbot. No, I didn't mean turbot, the fish. I meant turbot.
Okay.
Turbot, the artificial intelligence version of a turbot. Okay. Turbot. Turbot.
So you eat that with cornichons?
Yeah, eat it with cornichons and caperberries.
Caperberries.
Turbot.
Okay. I think you are a match for AI, is what I would say. If AI ever tries to take over the world, we'll just send you in, and it'll be like that episode of... There's an episode of Star Trek, isn't there, where there's a computer about to take over the world, and then all they have to do is say something that contradicts itself, and then the computer explodes. Do you remember that one? It goes...
No, I don't remember that. I think you're making that one up there.
I would never...
Yeah,
that's
a real one.
I would never make up the plot to a popular piece of entertainment. I would stay... Trying to remember what the...
Did it
what
have it Bjork did. In it?
It had... Scotty was in it. I think Scotty was the one... Yeah. I think he was the one who tricked the computer.
That one when they said, beam me up, Scotty, and then he was hanging. He hanged himself. That one.
It's been so dark, this podcast. I'm sorry, Totten.
It's not, that spin-off, not Star Trek, Suicide Trek. Suicide Trek is just a spaceship going off. With all like different characters, and every episode, someone else tops himself.
Okay, I think I'll try to remember to put a trigger warning on this podcast. There's a few people who might not want to listen to some of this.
What, Star Trek? Fans?
Star Trek fans were very upset. All I'm doing, Paul, I'm sitting here thinking, why did I waste 3 hours this afternoon researching your life?
It's not a waste to me.
It's not a waste. It was wonderful to do, and I enjoyed it very much.
Because that is not a waste. That will make me glow for weeks to come, thinking, Richard has researched my life.
I was
for
researching
3 hours.
You. I was looking at your funny clips. I told you before, and the funny. This is sort of a backward compliment, because the thing I found funniest was your curated thing for The Guardian. You are an extremely funny comedian, but you'd picked out 10 clips from the internet of just people falling over.
Yeah.
But they were just the funniest.
The funniest
the
one.
The absolute funniest thing. I there's no point in trying to describe it, but search for Paul Foot, 10 funniest thing, Guardian.
Probably,
or just probably, Paul Foot, good at Guardian. You'll probably get the other Paul Foot. So put Paul Foot, comedian.
Paul Foot, comedian, who's not dead.
Living.
Paul Foot, who's alive, not the one who died in 2004.
Yeah.
Still alive, that one. Guardian.
Are you ever mistaken for the Paul Foot from the journalist Paul Foot?
Not apart from in graveyards. Not very often, because he is dead, you know.
I know, but, you know, people are stupid. I didn't know Pavarotti was dead. I thought Pavarotti was alive, and he died in 2007.
Yeah, sometimes one just doesn't know.
No.
This one. Like Sir Keith Chegwin.
Yes.
I didn't know he was gone.
Oh, yeah, he's gone. Yeah. And his sister Janis Long has died as well.
Oh. Janis Joplin.
Janis Long. Janis Joplin is dead, yeah. Janis Joplin is dead, yeah. King Henry VIII is dead as well. Yeah. I mean, we can go. There's a lot of people. It's probably easier. It's probably easier to list everyone who's alive than everyone who's dead, but it would still take an awfully long time.
Yeah, it would be ages.
It would be ages. But I think there's a lot of people you couldn't name in both categories.
Yeah, people you wouldn't...
If you had to absolutely research it and find everyone... You could probably find out the name of everyone alive eventually, but it would be hard to find the name of everyone who died.
Yeah, that would be impossible.
It would be impossible, but you could just make some up.
You start with Adam and Eve. That's that's an easy start. Yeah. Cain, that's day one. You think, right, I'm doing well here.
Cain and Abel. There was the other woman as well, though, that was before Eve, who's... what's the wife in Frasier called? Is it Lilith? That's the name of the... So Adam had a wife called Lilith first.
Abraham.
Okay.
There's loads of them. Loads there of them is. You could come up with. Isaiah, Moses.
Well, I can list a lot of those because I did a show where I did Abraham, we got Isaac, we got Jacob, we got Judas and his brethren, Judas got Pharez and Zara, Tamar, Pharez got Ezra, got Aram, got Aminadab, Aminadab got Nason, Nason got Salmon, Salmon got Buzer, Rechab. I can go on. It's... Still in there. It's still in there, Paul. Can't remember gigging with you, whatever that gig was, with John Terry. I can't remember it, but I can remember every name in that list, forwards and backwards, and the acronym that helped me to remember it.
Incredible.
Yeah.
And what was incredible about it was, you know, it got a round of applause tonight. It went so well. It did. Much better and then, in the actual show where you did it.
It is. They don't even know if I got it right. I had it behind me on the screen. This is interesting. Is this true that you have face blindness?
Yes.
Because I've got aphantasia. I'll never talk about it, but I can't imagine. I can't imagine things in my inside my head, and it must be similar to that, right? I can't.
Is this a real
I've
thing?
Got no images. Yeah, I've got, when I think, I don't think in images, and I can't. If I try to picture something, I don't see an image.
Yeah. So therefore, do you recognise people's faces?
I do. So, but I've got some way of visualising, but it isn't the traditional way. So if I think of my wife's face, it sort of is like a shadow in the background, in sort of a reflection behind my field of vision kind of thing. But
and
I can't,
also,
can't bring
I suppose
it to
you could also, you know, you could use like word association to remind you of her face. Things like low self-esteem, desperate, things like that. Yeah. Those things would help.
That does help.
Bring
that
the name
does
to mind,
you know, it does
face
remind.
To mind,
but I can recognise people. So do you not have problems?
Yeah, I mean, I sometimes do.
Yeah.
But I very often, I'm not the worst, because I did do an interview recently with this woman, and she's she doesn't recognise her own husband.
You're right.
At all. When he comes back from the shop, she's just like, who are you? You know. Well, she knows, because she knows.
She sort of works it out.
She sort of works it out.
Here's the key, goes, so probably my husband.
But I'm not that bad, but it's been bad enough. Not bad is the wrong word, because it suggests that it's some... It's not a bad thing.
Well, it's difficult,
it's
though.
It's just difficult. And it's just, you know, it's happened so many times, and it keeps on happening. And sometimes I might meet someone at a party and talk to them for 25 minutes. We have some stupid conversation, and then they go to the loo or something, and I see them 5 minutes later.
Right.
And I don't recognise them.
Right, yeah, that's
then
pretty...
Obviously, once they were, then I remember the conversation, but there's this awkward thing of, do you not remember... Yeah, I remember talking... Yeah. To someone, I didn't realise you were them, you know.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of comedians have that because they're not really interested in other people.
Yeah, I know.
So they won't listen. There'll be someone who'll talk at them, and they'll go, yeah, fine, well, now let's talk about me, and then they won't recognise them 5 minutes later.
I am interested in other people.
Yeah.
And it was started a few years ago when I was at a family party, and I think because people were dressed more formally, it was like a big, like an extended party, lots of friends and things.
Sure.
And I didn't recognise my aunt, and I didn't recognise my mother.
Right.
Because she was all dressed formally, and I sort of, like, after like a few seconds, I sort of said, oh, you're my mother, you know.
Wow.
But I didn't realise what she looked like. And so if you said to me now, what does my mother look like? What does her hair look like? I can't remember. I've
right.
no idea, really. I couldn't visualise what she looks like. But I normally know her by context.
Yes.
Because you know, I get in her bed and she says, for Christ's sake, get out of there. You're too old for that. You know, for God's sake, this has got to end. This is absolutely, totally inappropriate on every level. Please, will you not get in bed with me again, you know? So therefore, I know who it is.
Yeah.
But if it's at a party, you know, I
mean,
yeah,
no, you know. That must be really difficult and really unsettling. Is it something that's happened over time, or has it always been the case?
I don't think it's always been. I never was brilliant at it.
Yeah.
But I think it was in my mid-30s or something, or early 30s, that it just seemed to change.
Yeah.
And so I had it all scanned to make sure my brain that there wasn't like some injury to it or anything like that. There isn't. They just said it's just a neurological weird thing that's happened.
Right.
So it doesn't bother me at all. It's just that it's nice for people to know. And when I meet people, I sometimes tell them.
Yeah.
So they don't think I'm being rude or not interested. I just don't know. And the worst things are things like famous people, because famous people, just because they're famous doesn't mean that I remember that. It's the same thing.
Sure.
And they often expect you to remember them.
Yes.
But I don't know, like, I was in the airport just before Christmas, and Rob Brydon came up to me and said, oh, hello, Paul. And I don't know how, but I just suddenly thought, that's Rob Brydon.
Okay.
And I was, because it would have been a bit awkward if I hadn't.
Yes.
And I was able to say, oh, hello, Rob.
Hello.
I don't know how I did that.
Yeah.
I did it, but other times there's famous people and they've said, hello, and they only met me like 3 days ago, and I'm just, oh, hi, and it's just like really awkward.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, I have it like a little bit, but I think just like normal people, like normal, sometimes you just forget who someone is, or you meet someone who... you met 20 years ago, and they it's awkward if someone really remembers you and you don't remember them at all. I've had that a couple of times.
Yes.
Like, they go, oh, hi, and you go, yeah. Once I went to a restaurant and the waiter was like, Rich, how you doing? And I was with friends, I was going, oh, hi, yeah. And then it was a guy who used to hang around with us, like, in the early days when we moved to London, but I'd absolutely forgotten. And even when he reminded me, I couldn't remember.
I mean, maybe you've had the same sort of thing as me. You've probably done lots of stupid, weird, silly things, because we're comedians, we do silly things. So I have sometimes people come up to me and say, you must remember this time 10 years ago. It was after a show and we all did some stupid thing. We all took our shirts off and then pretended to be frogs and leapfrogged around the town or something. And yes, it would be the only time in my life when I took my shirt off and leapfrogged around the town being a frog.
Yep.
But it wouldn't be by any means the first or last time I've done something really stupid and silly. And so I just don't remember.
Yeah.
And they're like, this was this night, I'll never forget it. This was so weird.
Yeah.
And I'm just sort of...
But that's your everyday existence.
That's my everyday existence.
I mean, that's what... The thing I find very interesting about you as a performer, I mean, I think you're an absolutely fantastic comedian. I love you. I think you're... Like, you're always called, like, surreal, but I think you're a very solid... Your act is full of proper jokes.
Oh, yes. I always think that sometimes people think surreal comedy is going to be sort of gently amusing or something.
Yeah.
But always make sure, always go for one laugh every 12 seconds on average, 5 a minute.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's proper jokes, but it's definitely from the perspective of you, which is what a comedian should be, right? Yeah. No, I don't think anyone else could do be Paul Foot. You are Paul Foot. But then I think, and I know you're a little bit off stage, but I think, I try to think of what Paul Foot's actual daily life is when I see you on stage, and I can't. Maybe we don't want to imagine it, maybe because you're this wonderful chameleon performer on stage, and a chameleon's not the right word. You don't blend into the background. But, you know, maybe we don't want to know the ordinary life, but is the ordinary life of Paul Foot, it seems to be, is it as sort of unusual as the Paul Foot on stage?
Yeah, I mean, in a way, it's just a normal life, but in a way, I suppose, I try to bring some eccentricities, or not eccentricities, just silliness into everything.
Yeah.
So, you know, like when I moved into my house and I wanted to get new cutlery, I went to a shop and I thought I have four forks and four knives and four spoons.
Yeah.
And I wanted every fork and knife and spoon to be all different and all of a different style.
Okay.
And then I wanted, so, and there's all different ones. One is a really big fork and one's a really small knife. And I choose the knives and forks at random.
Yeah.
So it's 4 times 4, so it's 16 different combinations.
Okay.
And occasionally I'll have the really small knife with a really big fork. And then the man in John Lewis, the assistant who was helping me in John Lewis, he was only really doing it because he actually worked in bedding. But I sort of said something about cutlery and he knew me from the TV and he was just like, this would be fun. Instead of working in bedding, I could just go and help this man called Paul Foot choose cutlery. It'll be a laugh.
Yep.
And then he was saying, do you like to spend your whole life as a joke? And I said, well, as much as possible, I like to make things a bit of a joke.
Yes.
Yeah. Sort of silly, you know.
And, yeah.
And just, I like sort of silly stuff like... When my milkman comes, I'm the only one. I'm all often up at like 3 a.m. and I run downstairs. I hear his milk float come and I go and have a chat with him for half an hour outside. Okay. And then stuff happens, like sometimes his milk float, like the tire explodes. It quite often explodes because the head of the dairy refuses to get a new tire, and so they just keep doing like repairs like on a bicycle tire and they explode. And then he has to come in my house and like have a brandy while we wait for a special man he rings who's on a 24-hour call out thing who comes and repairs milk float burst tires in the middle of the night. And it's all just like a laugh, it's silly, you know.
I mean, I would 100% pay. Even just the idea of you going to buy knives and forks and buying ordinary knives and forks just really amuses me for some reason. I would love to have a 24-hour channel just following
Yeah,
you.
It's all just...
If I had the money to do that, Paul, I would have a camera crew following you all the time and just stream that online.
To have fun. Like my neighbours across the road, they're in their 70s and they often say to me, I'm really good friends with them, they say, it started in lockdown that I would, because we couldn't go to each other's houses, I would sit in the garden socially distanced and sort of have my breakfast, and it was just an opportunity for them to get a bit of company and vice versa. And it's just continued to now. And then sometimes they say, oh, it's a lovely day. Why don't you pop round for your breakfast? And I say, oh, yes, good idea. And I say, I'll be round in 5 minutes. And they know that sometimes I will be round in 5 minutes, but sometimes I won't turn up for 2.5 hours. And I'll just turn up with a tray with, like, a massive, like, four-course meal that I cooked and just eat it in their garden. It's just fun, isn't it? It's a laugh. It's silly. Silly. Just a bit of silliness.
It is, but, it's nice to commit that much, and it's nice to, I guess, to live that, be able to live that life. You're enjoying it, right? I mean, you're not just crazy and having a terrible time.
No, I like to have fun. Yeah, I like to have fun. Just do silly things,
But comedy's always is a little balance. But, and I think about this a lot because a lot of things I do, I'm deliberately pushing the boundaries of sanity backwards and doing things... Like within comedy, not within real life, I have to say, that, are weird or too pedantic or whatever. There is that danger that you slip over the edge full time if you're not careful, or do you think it keeps you relatively sane insane? Well, just because comedy's about that, that's all funny because it's slightly mad, right? It's mad to go and buy 4 different knives and forks.
Yeah.
But if you're doing it consciously, it's not mad, it's funny. But if you're but there's a point where you could just be going to John Lewis and buying a variety of different items and taking them home. And then they have to go, it's time to put Paul Foot in some kind of institution.
I think probably it's comedy that keeps me sane.
Yeah.
Because comedy, in a way, I'm most serious, actually, maybe after a show or the next day when I'm sort of analysing... at the moment I'm creating a new show and I write it with my co-writer, we work together, and that can be quite sort of serious work, sitting there saying, okay, this is going really well, but this first bit seems a bit too long, and actually that link, and it's all quite sort of serious. Yeah. And that probably keeps me... That's the only time when I'm serious, really. because the rest of my life I'm not serious.
Yeah.
When I go on stage, I obviously have to not be serious. It can't be all... Oh, I'm going to do this show now. It's got to be a light, fun energy.
Yeah.
So that's the only time I'm serious, really. Yeah. But when I'm working on the comedy show, it was 67 minutes tonight, but it really needs to be running to 62 minutes. You need to shave off a little bit there. All serious,
Yeah, serious. But it's lovely. It's lovely. We should say this is going out during the Edinburgh Fringe. So you're on the Edinburgh Fringe with this show. What's the show called, Paul?
Dissolve.
Dissolve. Yeah, that's a very good name. And it promises, among other things, and I'm not expecting you to tell us now, the secret of life, the meaning of life.
Yes.
So that's pretty good. And you're touring that show as well. So if people aren't at Edinburgh, they can see that on tour in the autumn, right?
Yeah, and it's actually, it's an unusual show.
Yeah.
Because it's personal. In fact, I've never done a show like this before.
Yeah.
In fact, as you've sort of intimated... My life is all a bit silly, and you sort of think, oh, what would 24 hours be like with me and all that sort of stuff. And in a way, we've done a few, said some more serious things in this podcast, but there's been a lot of just sort of silliness.
There has been.
A lot of actually all, So in this is unusual, this show, because I talk about my personal history, and it's all about having basically 29 years of absolutely crippling depression and how it all just ended quite unexpectedly, in an instant, on the 20th of March last year.
Right.
So that's what it's about.
So, yeah, we'll you'll have to go and see the show to find out what that is, but that's a pretty good hook for this show. I'm very intrigued to see it, so I will try and catch it on tour. I'm not going to be up in Edinburgh.
When you say try and catch it on tour, you mean you're not going?
I'm not going now. Yeah. I'm too busy doing my own stuff. I won't be able to remember who you are. And that, luckily, neither will you. I'll just say, yeah, I was there, Paul. Didn't you see me in the... I was in the front row. Didn't you see me? Oh, you didn't recognise me.
Well,
oh,
like that fancy time when I made up a thing about John Terry, which I'm sure I never did.
It's in my blog. My blog is a very honest thing. Right, we better... there's lots of things I was going to talk to you about. You can become... you can join the Guild of Paul Foot Connoisseurs on your website.
Yes.
So you have this kind of... you have such a secret society of fans, and then there were too many of them got involved, so you have to have a sort of secret member of the secret members, right? Because popular.
What I do is I have my... I have my secret society,
yeah,
which is the people who
join your email
join
list.
My email list. Yeah. I don't like to call it that. It's more of a society, you know.
It's not as nice as the Guild of Portal Connoisseurs.
And then, I have secret shows, which just means that I don't advertise them anywhere apart from they just tell people on my list in London, and they have to have a password to book it, that sort of thing.
Right.
And then there's lots of people come to the secret shows, quite regulars. So then sometimes I shouldn't really be saying this, but it's so secret. But sometimes I do have a secret show.
Yeah.
That you have to have been to a secret show and you have to have written your name on a special list at least two or three times. You have to have been to a few secret shows, or at least say, look, I've only been to one, but I really, really, really enjoyed it. And then you can then be invited to a secret show.
Yeah, it's good.
Yes.
And I bet there's a secret show that you can't talk about.
I couldn't comment on that, because that's so secret. That's levels of secrecy.
Well, Paul, you're a truly great Briton.
You're a truly
great comedian. I'm glad that you exist, because you're so yourself, and it's an absolute wonderful thing. Do go and catch Paul live, and please give it up for the amazing Paul Foot, ladies and gentlemen. You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Paul Foot. Thank you very much to Scant Regard. It's one man, and he did this music all on his own. I'm indebted to Chris Evans, not that one. I would also like to thank everyone at the Hanger Farms Arts Centre for getting this together very quickly at the last minute, not realising they had to record it. Thank you also to Martin at the Square Theatre for organising these gigs. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.